Hi, I'm just trying to recall. Does it record while I'm speaking too?
Yes, you are now recording, Booth, and you can retrieve the file after the session is finished. And did you follow the instructions that we gave earlier to Damien? Was everything clear to you when describing what needed to be done for recording?
I just clicked file and I found just record and I clicked it. Do I have to follow other instructions?
No, you're recording everything now, and for everyone else that's in the session now as we're getting ready to start, each of you can record this session on your own hard drive on your computers. It will also be recorded here at Alatto Admin, and then we'll host it on a server, and the link will go to Tapped In to BJ Berquist as well as to Michael, and email notices will go out to you as to where you can retrieve it if you want subsequently. So it'll be archived for on demand. But what is happening when you record it is it records everything. It will record the slides that come up in sync with the audio. So whoever is presenting something at that moment, if they are also showing slides, as Jonathan will be doing, those slides will be embedded in the Windows Media audio file. There'll be two files on your hard drive that both will be named the same, but one will be an HTML file and the second one will be a Windows Media file. You just need to click on the HTML file when you want to play it back subsequently. I hope that's clear. I see Daphne's recording now.
Okay, thanks for the illustration. It's great. I actually the box that popped up took me to my C drive where I saved it in a folder. I named it what I named this as Hawaii already.
I'm just going to chip in here and let everybody know there's 5 minutes till we start. I'm going to be extremely prompt. There are only a few people here at the moment, but I'm going to start whether there are three people or 20. But Aidan and Daphne, you might remember Christine, who is kind of a webhead, and she's going to say hi to you. So listen a minute.
Hi, Aidan and Daphne. It's Christine. How are you?
Hello, Christine. What are you doing there, so far away?
Attending a fun conference in a fun place.
All right, we should probably just leave the next 4 minutes for anything that needs to be said. Aidan, are you feeling okay? Please, no more blue screens. Tell your computer to behave.
Okay, thanks for waiting. I would just like to tell everyone that I have a friend here. She's Taiwanese, and her name is China. If you can see her ID is Tai. It's her surname. She's studying her master's at the a university in Michigan. But then perhaps we can ask her that.
Aidan, I think you're going to need to speak directly into the microphone and a little bit more forcefully, please.
Sorry, I got confused back there because I have these two things in front of me. One is the earplug and the one is the microphone. When I spoke earlier, I did not hold on to the mic. It's so stupid of me. But anyways, I have a friend here. Her name is China, and you can see her ID. It says Tsai. That's her surname. She's studying her master's at the University in Michigan, so perhaps you can ask her that.
Just a last minute reminder to everybody that once I start speaking, and I will start right on 1:30, no one else is to talk until you're asked. Andy, can you help me control them, please? So, and Aidan, you'll be first. Yes, please keep your comments to the text chat once I begin in about a minute's time. Thanks.
Michael, I'm going to send you a private message now, and it gives you instructions on how to block everyone so that you know how to control it, and also it will tell you how to release it. So here it comes, okay?
It's not going to be that private, Andy, because there are about 10 people in the room here now who can read any private message you may send me, but as long as you know.
Yes, but you're the only one that can control the audio from your end. So, you know, all the other remote audience from throughout the world will be locked out, and you're the only one that will be able to speak. And then you'll know how to release it as well, okay, so that when you're ready, the rest of us can chime in.
Okay, just one last point is that I will just have my headset off for a minute while I get things started here in the room, and then I'll put my headset back on and you will hear me take up the presentation commentary, so to speak, from there. So just don't be alarmed for a minute or two if you hear nothing from now, okay?
Okay, I will begin, and just a couple of things before I talk to all the other people who are going to be part of this presentation elsewhere in the world. And one of them is to feel very free to look out the window anytime. I'm sure you can look, listen to me and other people and take in the lovely view. And the other thing, yeah, I'm going to be wearing headphones. I'm wearing headphones so I can use the microphone attached to the headset to speak to the other people, some of whom are listed there. And also there are a number of people in text chat around the world that are able to be listening to the presentation if I'm wearing these. Okay.
So, remote folks, I hope you can hear me from now on. Voice Online, the missing link. Welcome to the session. My name's Michael Coghlan. I come from the Douglas Mawson Institute of Technology in Adelaide, Australia. And Voice Online, the missing link. Why the missing link? Or the missing link between what? Well, there's a few ideas. The missing link between emotion and intellect, between student and teacher, between student and student, between loneliness and a feeling of company or group identity if you're in an online course, between a state of procrastination and a state of motivation, and perhaps a link between campus-based and DE students. There are a number of DE being distance ed, a number of other ways that you could conceive of voice online as the missing link, but there are a few. There are lots of ways you can use voice online. You can record a narration to PowerPoint slides, for example, and put them up on the net. You can record lectures and put them up for later retrieval from the students, but really what I'm focusing most on is asynchronous interactions, using voice online to talking to people at that moment. That synchronous versus asynchronous debate's a really interesting one. People have a lot of very strongly held opinions, and they're often in total opposite to each other, but the point is it's not an either-or situation. Synchronous and asynchronous tools should be used together so that to complement each other. My background is ESL, or English as a Second Language teacher, and it's fairly obvious to see the application of these tools in a language learning environment. But the more and more I delve into this inquiry into the use of voice online, I find that it's being used all over the place, in all faculties, program areas, departments, disciplines, in a very informal sense. It's more or less happening in the background. You've got people who are typically doing it at home. Students are talking to other students. Students are talking to their lecturers. It happens at home because many institutions have firewalls, which means you can't use these tools on campus. You've got to go home and do them. So it actually promotes this informal character or characteristic to a lot of this communication. We'll hear more about that later in the presentation. My mission, to enrich remote and campus-based classes with voice-based interactions, and to convince you folks here today that it's possible and worthwhile. The session will have a number of remote presenters, four. I'm not going to introduce them in any detail because there's detail about them in the handout. After they've spoken, you are encouraged to ask questions and comments via the use of this remote microphone, which actually can move around the room quite a ways, and you won't actually have to move. And for the benefit of people who are in the chat or in Alado at the moment, there are only about 10 of us here in the room in Honolulu. And people here in Honolulu can see that there are about 10 to 12 people present from various points around the world at the moment listening to me and reading what's taking place in the voice chat. The first person who's going to give us a remote presentation is Aidan Yeh from the first University of Science and Technology in Taiwan. Aidan's going to talk to us about her experiences using these voice chat tools with her students in the University of Taiwan. So Aidan, I'm going to stop talking and hand the mic over to you.
Thank you, Michael. As you know, advanced listening and speaking is a compulsory subject for foreign language students studying at university level in Taiwan. One of the aims of this course is to enhance the students' English communication skills by giving them plenty of opportunities to use and experience the language. Providing authentic forms of communication proves to be difficult among ESL teachers. Now, this is where computer-mediated communication tools, particularly synchronous chats, may provide a more stimulating environment for students. Having said this, I will be sharing with you two successful projects I did last school year. This project involved task-based activities wherein students were asked to perform content-specific tasks that were divided into three phases, pre-chat, during chat, and post-chat activities. I will begin with Fear of Being Too Good, a project with Michael Coughlin. The title is based on Michael's original composition. In this project, the students interviewed Michael about his composition and his life as a singer and composer. In this project also, the students learned how to interpret the song and voice out their thoughts and opinions about the composition by recording their voices and saving their work as a WAV file, which was later on uploaded in our classes review groups. We already had listening and vocabulary power activities. Students were engaged in the discussion and carried out the conversation with Michael with little teacher intervention, as I was repeatedly catapulted from the chat conference. The second project is the one I did with Arnold Moran about TPR, or what we know as the Total Physical Response. In this project, students learned about the specific teaching pedagogy, TPR, its theory and practice. As a pre-online chat activity, tasks were given as assignments a week before the online chat event. Students were asked to research on the topic and read and listen to the materials prepared by Arnold. Now, this project is different in a sense that we used an LCD projector to broadcast and to project the images as they appear in the students' computer monitors. In this way, all the students were engaged in the chat, and there were 12 students who were in the chat room with Arnold, while the other 12 were viewing or watching the huge screen. Arnold projects URLs and asks the students to read the topics one at a time and solicit their opinions by asking them questions. The topics prepared by Arnold were very stimulating. The students get carried away with the discussion. We didn't have enough time to finish all the topics that Arnold prepared, but we were able to cover the most important aspects of TPR. I suggest that you read the chat log to see and understand what went on during the chat. Now, as a post-online chat activity, which was given a week after, the students prepared their own TPR activity to be demonstrated in class with their classmates as participants. The TPR lessons were given with adult ESL students in mind. Now, after every presentation, students post their feedback on the student presenter's performance and the TPR lesson plan. Although we used the voice capability of Yahoo only in the latter part of the activity, which made this chat event highly text-based, my students were able to communicate with a foreign teacher and were able to discuss with him the details of the subject matter. The whole experience is very educational, and it was delivered in an authentic manner. Now, this form of learning would not have been possible in a traditional classroom. Computer-mediated tools have bridged a gap in delivering authentic materials and ways in acquiring the English language. On the other hand, having access to these tools and knowledge in using them aren't enough. Tools are useless without people. Now, this is where Redheads, a vibrant online community of teachers, students, and educators, plays its part in the process of blending the right tools. Headed by a techno-savvy guru, Van Stevens, Webheads, I believe, is the most influential factor in my profession as a teacher. And I should mention here that Michael, Arnold, Daphne, myself, Booth, and all others, some of them are here online with us, are members of Webheads online community. But in a nutshell, the use of text and voice chat tools has altered my views on learning and teaching. These tools have given me access to authentic means of communication for my students to learn from people in different parts of the globe. Each online project has its own appeal, but Every project has left an indelible mark that is fascinating, rewarding, and exciting. Truly an authentic experience. Well, that is my presentation. Back to you, Michael. If you have any questions, I would be happy to answer them.
It's okay. I did something stupid. Not unusual. Thanks, Hayden. That was very clear here. Now, what we'd like to do, as I said, after each remote presenter, open it to you. So Aidan's talked about two experiences there, one that I was very much a part of, and number one, and number two, where she actually had a guest lecturer from Holland talk to her students in Taiwan using a tool very similar to this. Feel very free, please, to make comment. I know I'll bring the microphone over to you.
This is Catherine Bowman, and I found a couple of problems with the presentation. One, it was like sitting and listening to a radio because it didn't feel interactive and there were no graphics that helped out. And the third one is you go so fast that you really have to rush to keep up with it. And I'm very interested in learning more about this whole project and process. Thank you very much. I hope I wasn't too harsh.
Well, no, you're not. I apologize for that because I was trying to beat the time because I was just given 5 minutes to do everything and to speak to projects in a very short time is quite difficult for me. And I know that I spoke too fast because I'm holding the mic and I'm afraid that, you know, to be booted out in this conference, which I was already. And but anyways, yes, if you have this huge screen over there, it would be really much better, like the ones that I do with my students. And I don't. Well, yes, back to you, Michael.
Thanks, Aidan. Any other comments or questions for Aidan before we move on? Is it Catherine? Yeah. Catherine has asked what's happening that breaks up the voice. And, well, so often when you're dealing with video or audio on the net, there's so many things that could be the reason. My guess is that it's at Aidan's end because she's... Are you on broadband, Aidan? I don't think you are, but tell me. Tell us.
In our school, you mean? In our computer lab, we used DSL connection, but we have about 2022 computer monitor in our school, so the speed isn't that fast compared to ADSL.
I'll just comment from my own perspective of having been certainly involved in the first example with Aidan, where she actually got her students interviewing me. I mean, yes, there were technological hassles, but I know from my experience and from the feedback from her students, those that took part, just they were enthralled at the fact that they could actually talk to me in Australia, ask me about my experience as a musician, as a teacher, and those that didn't want to speak to me or couldn't speak to me communicated with me in the text chat. It was an amazing event. And well, I probably shouldn't say too much, but are there any other comments or questions for Aidan? Yes, we have a comment, but this person probably has to walk down here, please.
I think there's a big difference between the hesitancy that was mentioned previously about the delivery and the project that was mentioned, because one is delivering straight information, and that I don't think is a really good use of audio. We use a lot of audio at our college. We use a lot of interviews. We use conversations. The way that really good radio is so powerful when you have documentaries and storytelling and all that sort of side of it. And we try our best to make sure our faculty don't use audio to deliver straight lectures because we don't think there's anything quite as boring as just a straight voice delivering things. But if you start to use audio to interview, to discuss, and to do storytelling, it's a really emotional and very powerful medium. We have a psychology instructor who sends his students off to interview other people, and then he meets with them. We record him in discussion with them. It's an assignment that they do. And it's powerful for the listeners, and it's also powerful for the students. So I think part of the initial reaction might have been that she's not a great use of audio just to deliver material, but it works for today, for the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. I was reading some very interesting stuff recently about how when people listen to the radio, they actually take in more than they do when they're watching television, because when you listen to the radio, you tend to be engaged in other activities, and therefore you're actually more receptive to information. So, interesting perspective on the use of voice and whether or not we actually need pictures when we're listening, because maybe we don't. But that's a whole other issue. Thanks, Aidan. It's time to move on. Daphne, sitting there in Valencia, it's very early in the morning in Valencia, about 2 o'clock in the morning, I believe, that Daphne is in Spain, but she's actually originally from the University of, forgotten your Simón Bolívar, I think, Daphne. But Daphne, please, I'm going to hand the microphone over to you, and we'll hear from Daphne how she's been using these tools in teacher training. Okay, Daphne?
Thank you, Michael. Good morning, or good afternoon, good evening, according to your location. I'm in Valencia, Spain. It is 2 o'clock in the morning now for me. Very early or very late, it depends. And I'm going to briefly describe two different experiences I have had using chat in teacher training. The first one was teaching ESL teachers to get acquainted with web tools and e-learning. This was my first actual experience using synchronous tools for teacher training. I was to deliver an online unit for my architecture students in Caracas, and I was in Spain. And this unit was a component of a face-to-face course in a program of English for architecture students at Universidad Simón Bolívar in Caracas, Venezuela, where I work. And both the students and the face-to-face teachers were in Caracas, and as I said, I was here in Spain. These two teachers had no previous experience in teaching online, nor in the use of web tools. And my aim was to show them the theoretical underpinnings of the unit and their realization through web tools. We started by exchanging emails, and we decided that it was very difficult to get to understand what they really wanted, what they didn't really understand. So I decided to start using the chat, the Yahoo Messenger chat, to discuss every evening for 2 weeks. We did that before the course started. The first week, it was really talking about how to use Yahoo Messenger, because they had no idea on how to use it. So it was more mostly technology what we were discussing. And then we started talking about the unit and about the theory. And at the same time, since this was an online unit, and I had designed to use different tools, so they had to know how to use these web tools. And while we were talking about e-learning and how these web tools should be used in the kind of constructivist approach that I wanted to have in this unit, we had the theory and the practice all together. And it was very good because since we were talking, they had immediate feedback of their questions. And we could negotiate meanings. Sometimes I used words they didn't understand, and they said, talking in Spanish, because that was in Spanish that we were discussing. Because they said that I was talking a different language because they didn't understand the words related to technology. And it was a very good experience, and I can say that once they were comfortable with the technology, they were the first one to look for me at any time to ask questions and to involve the students later during the unit with these tools. Some of the advantages of using a voice were, first, that it allowed us to take more advantage of the time we had for each session. And while in the chat, we could explore, as I said, the different tools. We could ask and answer questions. We could predict the problems students might face in each step and work collaboratively in the solutions to be provided to them. And as I said, too, discuss theoretical and methodological aspects as in a face-to-face meeting with immediate feedback from each other. The the disadvantage we encountered was technology. And some of the problems were that the sound was on and off, and sometimes one of us would get disconnected and would get a frozen screen. And I think that the worst is not to have a record of the conversation. It doesn't happen here in Alado, but in Yahoo it happens. So we found a good solution. We copied in the text chat the questions and the answers, just as if taking notes in a lecture. So we had the written part and also the voice. Then, since I'm telling that I only have 1 minute, my second experience was tutoring student teachers and tutors in an online course about e-learning. This was my second formal experience using voice for teacher training in a course I designed for the students of education of the University of Distance Education in Spain. This university had always used snail mail as a communication means for students and teachers. However, in the past year, they have been trying to incorporate WebCT to provide a virtual space for teachers to upload materials and communicate with their students. But this initiative has not been very successful because teachers are not used to the online environment and do not know how to make good use of it. And not to mention that WebCT, in my opinion, is not designed to provide real collaborative learning. The training offered tutors, I wanted to teach them how to use a platform in a collaborative way. And at the same time, I wanted it to be not only about technology, about the theory behind this technology for education. And so I set up a Yahoo group and invited all these teachers. And the idea was that in these 6 weeks, in the third week, they were already able to create their own Yahoo group and design activities and invite the classmates to answer these activities and to give feedback. Well, what I did with this for the consulting hour is that I offer 1 hour each day to meet with these students on an individual basis. But it happened that by the second week, we started having group chats with voice where they ask questions and they help each other. And it was not only me answering their questions, it was also the other students answering each other. So it was really collaborative. And to conclude, I can say that after the course finished, they are still working with their Yahoo group. They are still active. And those that were tutors have started using their WebCT in their own classes. And I still keep contact with them. There are many more things to say about that, but since we don't have time, I will give the floor back to Michael, and if you have questions, I will gladly answer them.
Thanks, Steph. I'm conscious of the fact that Aidan spoke really quickly because I was hassling her to finish on time, and you spoke a lot more slowly, and so perhaps I'm the reason for both of these presentations not going exactly the way you wanted them, but that's what it's like when we're operating on a time frame. And Jean-Michel's written something there in Portuguese, which I don't understand. However, are there any quick comments or questions for Daphne, who's been using these tools in training teachers?
Hi, Langley Frizzell from Hawaii Pacific University. Is this tool widely available to other universities?
Yes, this tool is widely available to the world.
The voice you've just heard belongs to Andy Pinkon, who will actually be talking shortly about how they are using this tool in Chicago, and he might well cover what you can do, under what conditions you may get it. But we'll let Andy talk to all of that. Any last comments or questions for Daphne before we move on? Okay, Jonathan, I see you're about to take the microphone. And we'll hear from Jonathan. Jonathan has a number of ways you can describe him. Let's just say at the moment he's one of the co-founders of a wonderful site called Learning Times, which I'm sure Jonathan's going to tell us about. And he will also touch on the notion of informal learning. Over to you, Jonathan.
Thanks, Michael. I was worried where you were going with that introduction. But one thing I can say for certain is I'm jealous of all of you. Michael shared with us photos. I've just put a link into the Alato chat area if Andy wouldn't mind showing that Hawaii view there. For the folks here online, this is what we're missing. So although we're having a lot of fun chatting and interacting with our keyboards and our microphones, it looks like you have a pleasant distraction off to the right side of the room, it seems. If we add a 2 there, we can actually see that I've just added the other link. I'm negotiating my control key and my copy and paste. So I think that's the room you're all in. It's lovely. It's also the fact that you're all sitting and listening to us talk to you while you're at a conference is not unlike many conference settings where we meet face-to-face and then sit and listen as one or a group of panelists speak to us. One of the great things about live or voice-based interaction online is just that, the interaction part. Often we bring people in from all over around the world, and of course the greatest connectivity or interaction we have with them is over at the buffet table at lunch or during the coffee breaks. It's that element of conferences that that I'm most focused upon, and as are my colleagues at Learning Times. It's what happens at the buffet table, it's what happens between sessions, and it's the Q&A period that happens during conferences like this. And so the use of voice is a great innovation online in being able to achieve that kind of informal networking or informal connections that I think are so important. If we had more time, I would tell you why the squirrel was the mascot of Learning Times. And in fact, if I could ask Andy to put the learningtimes.net site up one more time, you'll see the squirrel there. But the squirrel is a reminder that you can have some very human learning moments online, and it comes from a story about Merlin chasing some squirrels with King Arthur. We'll go into that more next time. So what I wanted to focus on in the remaining time I have, which is very little, is two things. One, the concept of community, and second is the concept of informal learning that that it engenders. And thank you, Andy, for putting up this slide. It's really about connecting people to people, not just people to content. And Andy, if you actually jump over to slide number 2, which is full of some heavy text, and that's really quite characteristic of, I think, of what a lot of e-learning has been to date, about metadata and learning object repositories and standards. And these are all very important things, and I'm glad there are people who are focused on working on these things. But when it comes to actually what it means to learners, I think that e-learning hasn't made the great jump to bring human connections into online learning. I think that's where the great promise is and where voice tools are most important. If we actually jump to slide 3 there, thanks, Andy. What makes online learning alive and active are those connections to people, and those can happen in a variety of different ways. I think a lot of people still think that online learning, when it comes to voice technologies, or forget the learning part, I think voice technologies, people still think of the concept of hearing a Britney Spears concert online with tens of thousands of people watching. To them, that's what it means to have voice on the internet. But let's take a look at slide 16, and you can see that the use of voice on the internet has a far wider spectrum than just attending a concert. You can have virtual classroom sessions where we'd all be gathered online from our desks at home or at the office with a guide taking us through material, much like we might in a classroom setting. It could be more like that television broadcast with Cher doing a concert. You might expect to have more of an entertainment value with that if you were doing that online. You might be more of a meeting or a conference. It's not learning that's happening per se with a formal agenda or a formal instructional curriculum, but that's happening as a group of people sit around a virtual table and talk to each other. I had such a meeting earlier today, and at 10 p.m. Eastern, 2 hours from now, colleagues from across the globe will be joining me for a meeting in such an online meeting room. Talk show formats or featured guest speakers are other ways of doing this in learning contexts, and certainly the peer-to-peer interaction, bringing people together for peer-based interaction. The goal here, of course, in interacting with you in the room over there in a short amount of time is to give you enough information about what's important to me so that you might have some questions to ask me. And seeing that we're close to the end of my time segment, I hope I've given you enough to ask me a couple of questions. So let me pause so you can do just that. If not, I certainly have a couple of other important things I'd like to say. Michael, any questions for me?
I'm looking around the room, and there is someone who is going to ask a question. Just a few seconds gap, Jonathan, while I move the mic over.
Hi, Ingrid Kirchner here from Mexico. I just had a question. Why were you asking Andy to put on the slides if you were also on a computer? Thank you.
Hi, Ingrid. Thanks for the question. And it's the second format or technical question that your group has asked today, and they're good ones. We didn't actually realize, in fact, Michael had been scheduled to be in a different room, and he was lucky enough to be in a room today that had a projector, even though he did not plan on it. So I was fortunate to have a deck of slides I could upload in 5 minutes right before the session started, but until just a few moments before, Michael did not expect to be able to have a projector for all of you. So Andy has is jumping in and advancing the visuals for us today. Any other questions?
Any other comments or questions for Jonathan? Good job. Comment volunteered out loud from down a few rows down. Well, Jonathan, let's give you another minute. I don't want to eat into Andy's time, and I'd like to leave some time at the end for the group here just to talk amongst ourselves, so to speak. But any last things you'd like to say, Jonathan?
Sure, and thanks for the comment there. If we take a look at slide 7, I've found that one of the things that that makes a community, and that's what Learning Times is most focused on, is how do you create informal learning communities, places where people have interaction beyond beyond just discussion boards or reading materials that are posted by an instructor. If you take a look at slide 7, see a list of a few items that I think help make for a community. Voice is one of them, but the social aspect is another. I'm not sure. There we go. That's slide 7. Thank you. The other aspect is that they're there 24/7. Instructors are not always available 24/7, and many of them who have moved their learning or teaching online have found that they are expected to be. But a community, especially one that's enabled with voice tools, has the greater benefit of putting the whole group at the disposal of the learner. So a community like learningtimes.org, which we'll bring up in just a second, is up 24/7. So people like Michael and yourself and some of the web heads who are online and about 11,000 people across the globe log in and ask each other questions and find that there's a timely response from somebody who's a resident expert, regardless of where they might be residing. So the other nice aspect of a community is that the content is created by the community, and that happens because there are people who play some great roles in online communities. Michael is a good example of someone playing a great role in a community. He's what we might call a mayor. He's taken a corner of a Learning Time site and has messed up the snow in it. That's one of the things about learning online that voice tools are great for. They help people feel less afraid about making the first jump and messing up the snow, whether it's by leaving a voice introduction or a message. Michael is excellent at that. All right, time to wind up. Yes, Michael, you are a mayor, if not a deputy mayor, and we'll make you you're the mayor of the voice community. One last thing, Michael, real quickly, is folks might want to check out the libraryconference.com site, which is an example of the equivalent of what you're doing there in Hawaii, but something that's happening completely online. And the goal, of course, is to connect people to people while also doing professional development, in this case about libraries. I'll turn the floor over to Michael, thank you.
Wonderful, Jonathan, thank you. And sorry also to wind you up, but we're human, all of us, and we all like to talk longer than our allocated time. It's just the way we are. See, I'm the mayor. I've got the control key. I can stand here as long as I want. I'll just make a point to the people who are here. Yes, as Jonathan said, it was not intended that I would have a screen and projector, and the whole nature of this presentation got changed and rechanged and rechanged, so that's why we actually have the benefit today of this wonderful tool, and you will hear from Andy Pinkon in a moment, who works for the Lido Development based in Chicago. They are the group who've developed this tool. It's a very fancy tool, as you can see, but you could do the same thing on Yahoo Messenger, which is a free tool, which we've done many, many times, where you can look at websites and use Yahoo to communicate. So I just wanted to make that point before we hear from Andy. When Andy's finished, we'll have a bit of feedback about Andy's session, and then we'll have some opportunity to talk amongst ourselves here. So Andy, when you're ready, please tell us about what wonderful things you're doing in Chicago with this tool.
Well, good afternoon and evening to everyone, and good morning to those of you in Asia. So I think as a beginning, I want to give you some reference frame to put the evolution of this tool in perspective and to how it's been developed and deployed. And toward that end, what I'm sending you now is the state of Illinois' network for telecommunications and distance education. The state, and if you can probably scroll on your browser over a bit, Michael, so that you can get all of the slide in and perhaps less of the text chat area. What everyone has here is some of the background on the state of Illinois as a development area for internet-based technology. And just to explain what that means quickly, the Netscape browser originally came from the University of Illinois. The Apache web server, which is still to this very day the number one web server in the world in terms of delivering web content, came from University of Illinois as well. Even Larry Ellison studied there before forming Oracle. So we have a rich history over a long period of time of having this infrastructure technology develop and emerge. And our colleges and universities and our state has invested heavily in this type of infrastructure for distance education. As such, you know, you can read some of the stats on the right of this slide to give you an idea of what we're doing. My colleague that is in this session with me is Dr. Clarice Krotochanka. She is the four C's that you see on the left in the text chat area of the people that are listed here. Clarice has been the director of the Chicago Consortium for Higher Education and manages a little over 60 distance education facilities, from museums to you know, high schools where we have infrastructure installed. We have over 6,000 locations fully wired for distance education and telecommunications within the state of Illinois. And over the time that we've had this, we've concentrated on the applications and the use of distance education. We, at City Colleges of Chicago, which is where Clarice and I are, we also have at the City Colleges campuses, there's a central office and then seven campuses, we have a television station that delivers distance ed. And the point behind all of this is that we have a rich history in developing content, developing curriculum, deploying it, and also dealing with all the problems of having educators use it, as well as all the technology difficulties in deploying it throughout the state. So here is an idea of the City College campus area. You can see the various colleges listed. As I go down the list, you've got Daly College, Harold Washington College, Kennedy King, Malcolm X, Olive Harvey, Harry Truman, Wilbur Wright, and Channel 20, and the Center for Distance Learning. The other part of this is that we also have in our group the Illinois Office of Educational Services, and at this point in time, I think you have a sense of that in the deployment of the technology, as you'll see it in Bridging the Digital Divide, which is the next part that I'm going to address. We've been trying to look at access to end users, not just end users in an academic and institutional setting, but end users that are also learners that are at home. And in that sense, that meant that we had to develop access for those learners, not only with bandwidth or dial-up connections, but also with computers. And 5 years ago, we began a project that was initiated by the mayor of Chicago to recycle computers. And Michael, if you can scroll, and the rest of you can scroll through these slides as they load the graphics, you'll have some sense of what we refer to about recycling computers from institutions and from businesses and federal and state government offices, refurbishing those computers and then deploying those computers out into the community and enabling the computers when we deploy them out into the community to be internet-ready computers so that we can, from this rich resource that we have in terms of capacity and in terms of trained people in distance ed and curriculums that are developed to deliver those curriculums out to those learners, whether they're adult learners or K through 12. So at this point in time, I think what I'd like to do is just open this up for discussion.
Thank you, Andy. I'm now looking at the people gathered in the room here and wondering if someone would like to comment or question anything that Andy has talked about so far. Clearly this is a different use of these sorts of tools. Chicago and Alado Development in particular are clearly very fortunate to have this wonderful tool, and they've used it not only for distance learning but to make links with the community in projects like this, which is a really very different concept about how you can start using these tools for very powerful social change. But enough from me. Comment? Question, anyone? Yes, just one moment, Andy.
Hi. It looks like you have very good bandwidth there in Chicago. Would this tool work in a low bandwidth dial-up environment?
Yes, it works as low as less than a half of a 56K dial-up. In fact, if you were to poll, or even we can actually do a test with all of the online people that you see here now, you would find that some of them are in fact on a less than 56K dial-up, and you might want to pose that question to them, or maybe while I'm talking I will, and we can ask everyone if they, if, for instance, BJ Berquist with Tapped In, she's on less than a 56K dial-up, and she's in Pennsylvania, so I know for a fact that she's there.
Well, I've just written what I will now say, and I'll vouch for what Andy says. And it's really interesting that a number of these tools these days, what Stephen Gilbert of the Teaching and Learning Technology Group calls low threshold applications, and part of the definition of these applications is that they run on 56K dial-up or less. It really is, there are a lot of tools now who do it, or which will do it. You can use them perfectly well from home on a modem dial-up. Andy, given the time left, we had the question earlier about how people go or how people might be able to use this tool or get access to it. So what would you tell people here who'd like to follow up with you about how other educational organizations may like to make use of this tool?
I think all they need to do is get in touch with you, and you can send them to me if you're their point of contact right now, and we can discuss how to reach them, or if they click on any of the Alado.net links, they can email me and we can enter into a dialogue as to how we can work together. Well, we have a question here from Learning Times, the CEO, John. And, you know, we just finished the development path right now, so at the moment we're not looking at doing much more with it, although we are deploying this out increasingly as a radio tool. In fact, tomorrow we have a meeting with a small radio conglomerate with 10 radio stations to actually deploy it that way.
Okay, thanks, Andy. Is there any last minute comment you'd like to make before I ask you to conclude your part of the session?
Well, I think our experience across the whole spectrum, we're focusing right now, let's say, to some extent on this tool, but the whole problem we have found historically with distance ed that has limited its deployment and acceptance has been the technology tends to get in the way. And the second issue is that there certainly has not been adequate training gone into the application by the presenters so that they can really know the limitations that they're working with and develop a presentation style that will work with distance end users. Those of you that have worked with me have seen the almost compulsive nature that I've had of ensuring that we know something about the equipment the end users have beforehand and their bandwidth. For instance, this last slide that I sent you is the reason why BJ in Pennsylvania was having problems with the audio packets dropping, because I sent too much to her limited bandwidth, and the same would have applied to anyone on a 56K dial-up. So I would, advise everyone that to really deliver a high-quality presentation to your end users, you need to be in their shoes more and understand what they can and can't do with the equipment that they have and the bandwidth limits that they have.
Andy, I think you've raised about 7,000 issues for discussion, not to mention the others that were already raised, so I'm going to hold it there. I think what I'd like to do now is probably officially sign off to the audio part of the remote presentation. And what I mean is, I'm going to ask people here in the room in Honolulu, are there any last things you'd like to say to any of the presenters before we just talk here? There's one more person. Do they mind if they get in touch with you personally? Well, if we use me as the conduit, talk to me and I'll talk to them, and I'm sure the answer is going to be they won't mind. Okay. So, Andy, Aidan, Jonathan and Daphne, I'm going to officially end the spoken part of the presentation in terms of the remote participants, or my part in it anyway, because what I'd like to do is close by having the people here talk for a bit. Thank you very, very much for your wonderful input. It's really appreciated, especially people like Daph, who's up in the morning at 2:30, 3 o'clock now, and Aidan, you had to get your kids off to school before you go off to a day's work. Really appreciate it. Jonathan will talk more about learning times, I promise you, so that's the last thing I'm going to do. So just once again from me to you folks out there, thank you very much. So I'm going to sign off from Honolulu, okay?
Aloha.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to us.
Thank you. It was an informative presentation.
Hello.
Hello. Andy, are you still there?
Yes, Booth, I'm still here, and you're still up, and it's very early in the morning for you. You must be very dedicated.
Yes, it's okay. I'm an up person anyway. Thank you for posting your email, and I will send you a message, actually, a letter, because I'm really very much interested in this, and I might submit a proposal to the Language Center of Kuwait University, since I have already sent one last week. I wish I had learned about a little earlier, so I would have added it to that proposal.
Well, I'd also like my colleague, Dr. Clarice Grotachanka, who's in here lurking right now, I'm going to call her into this to speak to you, because there may be some way that we can collaborate with our institution and yours in Kuwait. Would you be interested in having a brief discussion about that now?
Yes, actually, the Computer Center of Kuwait University has introduced lately a very advanced system, and I learned that they're working very hard on it. And there is really great efforts and intention to develop the center and provide more facilities for the whole all colleges of the university. I'm really interested in it. Someone from Aledo explained to me. I don't know, the right terms right now, to give to you, but we can exchange emails and I'm interested in on the pride and everything, so I can present it to the director.
Okay, Clarice, would you like to chime in now, please? Thank you.
Andy, as usual, I'm still having problems, and Booth, I'm still having some problems with feedback on this particular computer, so I won't say too much for right now, but to say that it sounds like a fascinating possibility, and we should at least exchange emails and probably have a chance when it's not quite so early in the morning for you nor late at night for us to be able to talk on a more extended basis.
And Bruce, we can use this as a way of talking with one another, because Clarice and others that are in our kind of education community do that regularly as a collaboration tool.
Great, thank you very much. And I wonder, I mean, if I want to contact you, I just come here, and I mean, is there a certain time that a schedule where I can find you here? Sorry, I didn't get the name right. Can you say the name again, please?
Andy, it's Greg Webb here from Sydney, Australia. I am interested in this product, but I'm trying to get a concept of whether it's a commercial product or whether it's a university project that's going to be distributed to other institutions.
You know, it's a combination, because the way we're using it, and I'll give you some of the history, there are four of us involved in the project, one of whom is blind, by the way, and is one of the developers. And over time, this various tools that we've used have evolved to where you see this particular tool is today. And as I said in my introduction earlier, the issues that we have with distance education frequently are the firewall issues at universities that limit the number of locations that we can transmit to and receive back from. And perhaps I'll give you an illustration of that here on an example, so you can see what our institution looks like at City Colleges. So hold on 1 minute while I get the file and send it, and then I'll continue this monologue. I'll wait till these pictures load up for you so you can see how we're deploying technology for distance education. So what we find is that you have IT departments that are not the same as the distance ed department in schools. If you then move outside of the school curriculum and you look at firewalls in general, whether they are used in business for adult learners and for business courses that are going to be delivered directly to companies and their company staff, or then you look at what's happening with higher end users that are more familiar with the use of technology, but maybe they could be home users, they could be home office companies that have it, not just in America, it's across the world. Firewalls really limit the type of packets that can be transmitted and received back and forth. And when the technology gets in the way of the content and the subject matter or the collaboration, then it becomes an obstacle, and people tend to throw the baby out with the bathwater and have little patience as to why it doesn't work. So the evolution of this tool has been created expressly to address some of those problems that I just enumerated. And fundamentally, you know, we have a nonprofit entity called Digital Workforce Education Society, which is deploying it. And some of the uses in that case are for the academic community worldwide. There are also commercial deployments that are being done through learning classrooms online and a few other people that are involved with the project and with the commercialization of it. And I don't know that clearly addresses your question, because it's a work in progress, particularly when it gets to further deploying of the tool throughout the world.
Okay, thanks, Andy. That does give me an idea. It's work in progress, and I guess you're letting some people use it for experimentation.
Yeah, and Michael falls into that category, and we're about to start a project with Aiden. We've worked with Aiden last year when we had some things going, and so we'll be doing something with her in some of our courses.
Well, it's a really great-looking product, so I hope you do get it to a stage where it can be distributed much more widely. Thank you very much.
Yeah, let me just add, this is Chris Jones in Yuma, that I really appreciate the information you've given out. I think that this would be quite useful in many teaching situations. I was quite impressed with what we've been able to do today. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks very much, Andy and everyone, and thanks, really enjoyed everything tonight. And I will email you and get in touch with you, and then we'll start exchanging emails and talk about it. Thank you very much, and good morning. Daphne, you're still here. Thank you very much, Daphne, and the rest. Jennifer, it was great presentation, and we really learned a lot, a great deal tonight. Appreciate it.